Many of the topics at our conference today have a controversial political dimension to them. And in a certain sense, this does too, though I don't want to dwell on the controversy so much as the what the cure or the healing of this controversial issue is. And it's the question of the use of charisma in teaching, the dangers of that, and how we address that. Charisma is, of course, actually usually considered a very positive quality. If a teacher has charisma, if a leader has charisma, it means that they can really reach deep into people's souls and to be able to motivate people, to inspire people. And yet, we're also aware, and with headlines to prove it, of the occasional dangers of highly charismatic teachers and leaders who can move people to do things that are not in their best interests. Some ugly examples over the last year of charismatic teachers who have been abusive. We know that really charismatic people can lead people to do acts of violence of all kinds. And so we want to explore how to approach this. I mean, our interest, of course, is in our own situation, our personal lives, and how to protect ourselves both as teachers when we're in a teaching or influencing position, and also as students or when we're in a position of being influenced, how to protect ourselves and to cultivate a healthy relationship in this very powerful relation between teacher and student, leader and follower. Sometimes you could even apply this to parent and child and spouses. And the teacher that I sort of focused on to guide us in this issue is someone very close to my heart. He's known as the She'eris Yisrael. This is Rav Yisrael Dovber of Vilednik, and his 1789 to 1850. He's for some people, a rather obscure Hasidic Rebbe, but for those who are really into Hasidus, he's a very precious Rebbe. He was a Talmud of Rebbe Mordechai Twersky of Chernobyl, the Chernobyler. He had contact with Rav Mordechai's father, Rav Nachum of Chernobyl, who was of the circle of the Baal Shem Tov. He had also in his lifetime close personal connection with Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, the Tzemach Tzedek of Chabad. He's well known within Hasidic circles. Actually, Chabad, I understand, disparages him somewhat, considers him not at the level of the Tzemach Tzedek. My own personal connection is that my youngest son is married to a woman from the Chabad family, who originally actually are descendants, direct descendants of her father is the great great grandson of the Vilednik Rebbe of Rabbi Yisrael Dovber, and my one of my grandchildren is named Yisrael Dovber or Yisrael Dovber after the Rebbe, and so we have a little personal connection here, and it was my mechutin who showed me this extraordinary sefer called the She'eris Yisrael. He knew I was interested in Hasidus and in Kabbalah. And in fact, his great-great-grandfather wrote the Sefer, and he has seen it as a kind of a personal mission to publish the Sefer. And I'm really grateful to him to do that, for him to do that, and I think we all should be. This is an amazing book. He is trying to get a larger, to publish it on a larger, sort of wider basis. It's essentially a manual for Hasidic Rebbeim. It's a Rebbe's manual of how to be a Hasidic Rebbe. I mean, it's rare to find a sefer that really addresses that issue. And he starts off right at the beginning with the dangers of the relationship between Rebbe and Hasid, Rebbe and Talmud. And it's a cautionary start, and it's an important start to as a Hasidic Rebbe is about to engage in a intimate relationship with any Hasid who comes to him for advice and counseling in Yechidus, as it's called, you know, in a personal interview. That's often a very deep spiritual diagnostic interview in which the Chassid really reveals very deep aspects of his own personal life and struggles, and the Rebbe tries to give advice and counsel. And the Sheiris Yisroel, the Vilednika Rebbe, recognizes that this precious opportunity of relationship is also fraught with danger. And he begins his book with a warning. And this, what we're seeing here on this page that I have here, is part one, chapter one of Sheiris Yisroel. The very first thing out of the gate is a warning to anyone who engages in a close personal relationship where there's a power imbalance about how to navigate and negotiate that relationship. So let's take a look at how he starts this and see if we can get the flavor of it and get the lesson that he's getting across here. So, you have it in English and in Hebrew on sides facing. I'm going to sort of refer to both. Posach harav v'inyin hiskashrus el tzadik. The rav, this is the secretary writing down this discussion of the Vilednika Rebbe. So the rav opened the discussion on the topic of connection to the tzadik. V'amar shekamo b'inyin hayichud zachar nekeva tzarich shiye mikodem b'kines nesira. Achar kach yicholios hayichud panim b'panim, which you read, pay base pay. B'chideshia b'chinas havdala mikodem b'chinas ein aruch zelaza. Says the just as in the union of male and female, there needs to be first a sawing apart, sawing, a sawing apart, a nesira, and afterwards there can be a union. Face to face, in order that there be first a separation of the aspect of incomparability. One is not comparable to the other. No comparison one to the other. Now here's a bit of a parenthesis. There's the Sheim lo kein me'orvim hachasadim v'hagvuros, v'tzarich litein lo kol hachasadim, lamshich la kol hagvuros, v'acharkak lamtik hagvuros v'chasadim li'achtan, k'moshe kosuv be'etz chayim v'prietz chayim. And because if there isn't a sawing apart first, then love and rigor or stern judgment are mixed together. And rather, there has to be a separating of that and a sawing apart for the relationship to begin. Let's take that. Already, I mean, this is the essential advice right here. In any relationship, particularly in an intimate relationship, before you can begin, you need to separate before real union is possible. And the model for this, it actually comes from the Gemara Brachos, and it's talking about Adam and Chava and the creation of the primordial man-woman, that they were originally created, according to the Gemara Brachos and Midrash, created B'Tselem Elohim as one being, male and female together. A hermaphrodite, right? An androgynous, however you want to call that. It was one being, male, female together, back to back. And that's the image of the Gemara. It's called du partzufim, two faces. They were facing away from each other, back to back. Very unified, but facing apart from each other. And the Gemara's take on that minor surgery or major surgery that goes on in the and it debates whether it was a major or minor surgery that goes on in the creation story, that Adam is somehow put to sleep and something is taken from him and built into Chava. This the Gemara understands as that they were sawed apart. It's called Nesira. Rashi used the term. It's also used in the Midrash. Back to back. There's a back to back, and they're sawed apart down the back, and then brought face to face to each other. It's a powerful image. The Lurianic Kabbalists, and you see this in the Eitz Chaim and the Pre Eitz Chaim, particularly in the Eitz Chaim, it has a whole chapter devoted to what's called Sodha Nasira, the mystery of the sawing apart. And there the idea is that while Adam and Chava were originally created in the image of God, Tzelem Elohim, as one being, you could say, well, what could be more unified than being the same flesh, you know, the same being? They were originally created as one. Yet the goal of their creation was to be sawed apart and brought face to face, which is a higher level of union than their original creation, even though they were one being, but they were what's called du partsufim, facing opposite from each other. So they are sawed apart and brought back face to face to create a higher union, says the Arizal in the Eitz Chaim. Interesting notion. I mean, this is all kind of psychological archetype that the Arizal is working with here, and that based on the Gemara. But that an unconscious absolute union as one organism is actually a lower level of union than separation and a rejoining face to face in consciousness. It's very interesting and I say fruitful and provocative notion. This is an essential principle in Lurianic Kabbalah, that face to face relationship is a higher spiritual level and more self-aware level than even an integral, one being in one body, an integral connection. And this becomes a model for the Velednica Rebbe here, the Sheyus Yisrael, and saying that in any relationship between Rebbe and Talmud, or Rebbe and Hasid, there has to be first, in order to be for there to be a really healthy, self-aware relationship, there has to be a sawing apart before you can have the relationship. Nice. Why that is, and why that's so important, he goes on to discuss. I mean, in the parenthesis, he deals with the basic Lurianic concept, and that's behind this whole notion of what's called birur, or clarification, that the process of our lives is a continual process of clarification and a separation of elements that are mixed together in an unself-aware way. Then the process of life is to become more clear, to separate and analyze things appropriately, and then to unify them in a more profound way. So he says, "Komo kein be'inyan his kashrus latzadik." The same thing in terms of connection to the tzadik. The relationship of a tzaddik and a chassid, or teacher and a student, is an archetypal relationship of giver and receiver, mashpia, makabel, mashpia in the sense of giving influence and receiving, which is in a certain sense, I mean, that's the gender relationship of male-female is understood archetypally as a giving-receiving. That's not to say that that in any of our marriage relationships, there are certainly times when the feminine gives and the male receives, but we're talking about a kind of a gender archetype, not the living reality. It says so too in the connection to the tzaddik, where there's a giving and a receiving. Tzarich sheyitnu shnehem da'atam mitchila b'chinas richuk behevdel zemize she'ainu v'yishpashpishu kol echad v'chad b'moso. Whenever you're going to set up an intimate relationship of giver and receiver, and so teaching, teacher-student relationship is such a thing, both at the beginning, both partners have to give their mind, in other words, to focus their attention at the beginning on the distance and the difference between them, that they analyze this insightfully and they research it, each one coming to know what his own or her own nature is. I was trying to say, when a teacher and a student, Rebbe and a Hasid, establish a relationship, before you get into the enthusiasm and the excitement and the emotions of the connection, you have to step back first. And each person has to look at themselves and realize, I'm not the other person, and they're not me. And unless we have that moment of honesty and respect for the other as other, dangerous things can happen, particularly in a very intimate and powerful relationship, and particularly when levels of power are not the same. If you don't look at this, and he says, if you don't look at each one of them at their own nature, there can be a kind of crossing and a crossing of expectations, a mixing of personalities in a way that can be destructive to both. So he says, "Hena makabel tzarich lida ekshu rachok ma'od me'atzadik ad she'nechnav nishbar libo b'kirbo." The one who receives has to know how far he is from the tzaddik, so that he is, submits and his heart breaks within him. But tzaddik tzrich gam kein le'ayin le'pashpesh v'mahuso ech shivisrachek v'mahus makabel. And the tzaddik, this Hasidic Rebbe, has to also, analyze and investigate his own nature and realize his distance from the person that's receiving from him. He can't assume, the tzaddik can't assume that the student is just like him, or should be just like him, or thinks in the way that he thinks, and he shouldn't assume that the student should just fall into his way of, the tzaddik's way of thinking. That would be to do violence to the student, to do violence to the chassid. And so too, the chassid can't have false expectations, or the student not have false expectations, about the nature of his relationship to the teacher. Both of them have to step back and set up their personal boundaries through self-awareness before they can engage in relationship in a healthy and a safe way. Throughout this, he will argue strongly against the Talmid surrendering himself to the Rebbe. That he should never do. But what he's trying to get across is that what the mistake he says that Hasidim often make and that students sometimes make with teachers is that they too strongly identify with the teacher, with the Rebbe, so that they lose their own self awareness. And don't assume that you are the same as the Rebbe, and that everything is, thank you, that you can pick up on the practices of the Rebbe, the teaching of the Rebbe, you know what the Rebbe is talking about, the teacher is talking about. You have to have a certain sense of humility about yourself. Okay, when his heart breaks within him, it's not to be totally vulnerable. It's to be, to not have false expectations about how, whether he is the same as the Rebbe, and therefore should model himself completely on the Rebbe. He's a different person. We'll see there's a very postmodern feel to this. We'll see how postmodern this really is. Yeah, Alan.
Common, really interesting comment. So, what is the connection between the Havdalah, as is written in the Yitzchayim and pre-Yitzchayim?
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a moment. You'll get to that. You're reading ahead, though. But hold that thought. We'll get right to it. If we put this into terms that perhaps we're a little more familiar with in our modern idiom, what he's warning against is the problem of, let's say in psychoanalytic terms, the problem of transference, right? And this is a really important issue that every teacher should be aware of, as well as every psychoanalyst. Every Rav has to be aware of this, of the dangers of transference, but also the power of it. Transference, as Freud discovered it, and as it's discussed in psychoanalytic literature, is when a client's feelings are redirected to the therapist from a significant person in the client's life to the therapist, and the patient then projects the mother, the father, or someone powerful in their lives, onto the therapist. And along with this projection comes an opening of profound emotional, the emotional feelings, profound emotional flow, parentification of the therapist, extreme dependence, feelings of love, even therapist seen in a kind of a godlike or guru status. At first, when Freud and the psychoanalysts kind of uncovered this principle of transference, they thought it was a dangerous principle, which it is, and tried to kind of block it out as much as possible. Ultimately, it became, they've kind of changed their approach to it and tried to use the power of transference, to use it but then to undercut it at the same time, and to use it in a very delicate way. Here, the Velednikov Rebbe is recognizing the danger of a certain power in the relationship, and making sure that the teacher and the student are both aware of this and step back from it first, undercut it first, set up proper boundaries, and then, in a more self-aware way, can engage in the relationship. Okay. So he says that tzaddik needs to examine and scrutinize his nature, how he is distant from the nature of the receiver, in order that the natures not be mixed, heaven forbid, such that there would come to, from this, heaven forbid, a yinikas haklipos, it's called, a suckling of the shells, to extend to a place that is not his. These are terms that come out of the Zohar, and I can give you the sources there at the bottom. This is sort of one of the great sins of Kabbalah, when a person extends to a place that is not his, and it allows the negativity in the world to draw from the power of the relationship. So what he's clearly referring to here, and what he'll refer to even more explicitly in just a moment, is the danger that a charismatic relationship with all the powers of transference, and also what's called counter-transference, when the therapist projects on the client, when the teacher projects on the student, that sense of that the power of that emotional attachment can lead even to improper, erotic feelings between therapist and patient, or between teacher and student. These are some of the issues that we've been, the Jewish community and other religious communities have been wrestling with for a long time now. And the inappropriate relations that come out of a powerful, charismatic teaching situation. So here's where he says, it's why you have to stress distance before intimacy. He says, this is what is written, peace, peace to the far and the near, right? Shalom, shalom, l'rchok l'karov, from Yeshayahu. But first there needs to be distance and separation. Afterwards there can be union, in the sense of closeness, which is the capacity of true knowledge. That's knowledge, now that's technically da'as, right? Has two aspects to it. I mean, we know that the word knowledge as, in the sense of biblical knowledge, that Adam Yada, is Ishto, that Adam knows. It's the term knowledge is used for intimate connection. And that's because the cognitive nature of knowledge is a very intimate connection. But knowledge is also, as opposed to Chochma and Bina, Da'as, is an analytical level of cognition, not just wisdom in the broad inclusive sense, but it's not just bina, which means discernment in the divisive sense, but knowledge is a bringing together of wisdom and discernment to create a analytical cognition, a union that is also included within it a separation, a distinction. And that's the essence of da'as. So this is where he says, as Alan referred to before, which requires a complete knowledge, and therefore the established havdalah in the bracha of chonein hada'as, right, of God who guarantees knowledge. Why the havdalah recognition at the end of Shabbos is in chonein hada'as? Because if there is no knowledge, where would distinction come from, says the Gemara Yerushalmi? So that, in other words, the ability to distinguish is an aspect of knowing, an aspect of the intimacy of cognition. But this causes the essence of the joining together, as is known, for knowledge is joining together. Knowledge is joining together, but that can only happen when there's a separation that's, that's integrated into the joining together process. It's a great proof for the for what he's trying to say. Right. You asked about that question also. Now, this is an issue that he's going to talk about this again in the last paragraph here. But the notion that the danger in a relationship between teacher and student, Chassid and Rebbe, is that the student can have unrealistic expectations of the Rebbe. He can think that the Rebbe really knows his every thought, knows what he's about. He should understand intuitively everything that the student is going through. The student has to step back, says, and realize he's not the Rebbe, and the Rebbe's not him. I have a friend who's a psychotherapist. He went to one of these weekends where you go for a whole weekend to learn psychoanalytic technique and to learn, you know, but it was one of these pop psychologist weekends. They could do it in a Marriott or one of these hotels, and so everyone's sitting, 400 people in the audience, and then one of these charismatic guys like a Tony Robbins. I don't know if he's familiar to you guys here. They're just very charismatic, kind of self-realization gurus was up there. And so this friend of mine is a psychoanalyst, was sort of, watching the master at work here, working the crowd. And then at one point, so this friend of mine is sitting in the audience next to a woman. All of a sudden, in the middle of the presentation, the guy up front, I forget who it was, but it's a well-known guy, comes striding off the stage, up the aisle, stands right in front of the woman that was sitting next to my friend, and just says, "I am not your father." Complete, random non sequitur. "I am not your father." And the woman bursts into tears. and later on turns to my friend and says, "Oh, that was the most moving moment, a transforming moment. What was that?" It's like one of those charlatan magic shows, But that was exactly the point. And he could have done that with almost anybody in the crowd, frankly. I congratulate whoever was for doing this. He knew that as people are listening to him for hours, and he's a very charismatic speaker, and they're adoring him, and they're hanging on every word, to go up to them and then break the transference. "I'm not who you think I am. And all those projections that you have on me, you got to be self-aware about that and break it off, back it off." That's a very important moment. It's a very important teaching moment. And so what he's referring to here, he'll come back to it in the last paragraph, this issue of what it is that the student tends to project on the teacher. We have to be careful about that projection. Pardon me? No, I think he means until, in the sense that there has to be a kind of an intellectual and moral humility here on the part of the student. It comes out later. But I see your point, but I know we react instinctively, and this is good instinct, that heartbroken, submission, we don't like submission, it's not a good term here. I know that. And the Rebbe here is very awake to that issue. He doesn't want the student to be too submissive to the Rebbe. It has to be to break his heart within himself, but not submission to the Rebbe, as we'll see. Yeah.
I just have a slightly different understanding of that. Correct me if I'm wrong, but yeah. I was going to say that, especially in religious pursuit, someone comes to a Rebbe and it really represents what the Rebbe is, represents their innermost yearning and it's their deepest heart's desire. And when you realize that when you are confronted with your deepest heart's desire and you feel that you are not living it, it's heartbreaking. It's exactly that. Yeah. So Attila's heart submits and is broken within him, and sort of the Rebbe then has to understand.
Very nice, exactly. No, he's coming to terms with the student is coming to terms with himself or herself,
yes,
to start with. That's the issue,
and
exactly.
And
he will say exactly that. And in truth, this is what the Rebbe is doing as well. He's in looking at himself and realizing that he is not the student, okay, but he's also, you know, trying to set up his own personal boundary and self-awareness as to, you know, and his limits, his own limits.
It is.
Right, and it's also a great moment of vulnerability. And this is what the Vladimir Rebbe is trying to get us to do, to respect that moment of vulnerability and not to abuse it. You know, that there, certainly the teacher should not abuse that vulnerability of the student. And that's the great danger here in the charismatic relationship. Yeah. Unfortunately, yeah. Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, we've had, as I say, just to make this politically relevant to what's going on in the world over the last year and several years, we've had terrible revelations of these kinds of things that have happened. So, but you know, and those are extreme cases, but they happen. We have to protect ourselves from those, and that's why this is an important topic. But this can also happen in the in less extreme ways. There can still be ways in which teachers impose themselves and their personalities on a student, and students absorb that, sometimes to the personal detriment of the student. It's a form of violence. Okay? And certainly in the teaching relationship, there's a way in which, you know, teaching is a teacher giving to a student, but and in giving, there's always a danger of violence when giving becomes imposing. And here, what the Rebbe is exactly talking about is, you know, how to filter out any kind of sense of violence, which is what is violence? I like Levinas's definition of violence. And that's when we act in the world as if we are the only agent to act, and the rest of the world is just there to receive our action. If a teacher teaches like that, that he's just giving and imposing the material or himself or herself on the student, that's an act of violence. And, pardon me? Well, it's power. It's power when power imposes, as opposed to, you know, a real mutual relationship where there's a healthy sense of boundary and a healthy sense of sharing. Then we get the violence out of the teaching relationship, and that's the danger, and that's the antidote, as the Vladimir Rebbe is saying it. Nobody says this in Hasidus. This is a most precious text. Nobody talks about this phenomenon, and that the Shiras Yisrael pins. You know, he identifies it and addresses it. This is the only place you'll see it, to my knowledge, and it's. It's just so important. This is a Rebbe's manual. That's why it goes on. Yeah. I mean, it's addressed in psychological literature a lot, absolutely, and it should be addressed more frequently. I'm trying to do that in our own Torah literature. Absolutely, it should be. Again, the what we'll see is, as we go on, he'll go just a little further into this to make clear what the dangers are. And then the next paragraph, he gives the example of, you know, the regarding v'zeh shekasu v'ish ki kach es achoso chesed hu. Okay, that pasuk, that verse, if a man takes his sister. This is chesed. Okay, it's an interesting choice of that proof text. It's the perfect proof text for him. Chesed means what here? Now, chesed normally means what?
Love, kindness,
chesed. But in this context, chesed is translated usually how? How would you translate chesed here? Chesed who? Disgrace. Abomination, yeah, I did disgrace because I was playing with the words. Since chesed is grace, you know, there's this way in which Hebrew has the brilliance of language that every once in a while you get a word that flips its meaning completely. Chesed can mean unconditional love. What could be sweeter than that? Chesed can mean abomination, you know, a disgrace. Grace and disgrace. The same word, Kodesh, Kedusha, Kadesha, right? I mean, that same kind of flip. Pardon me? Arum, perfect example. Arum can mean naked in the sense of open and a healthy thing, or clever in the sense of dissembled. You know, it's the brilliance of the language. So here, but this is his point exactly. An excess of love without boundaries leads to an abomination. Brother and sister, it's a, you know, the classic the classic prohibited relationship. It's actually the danger of it is it's too much love. They're too familiar. And that's the chesed, that's the abomination. So that's, and what he's saying is that the love relationship, the strong emotional connection between teacher and student, tzaddik and chassid, can lead to a dangerous relationship when it's an excess of love. That's that danger of the charismatic relationship. When both teacher and student project too much on each other and don't have a sense of proper personal boundary. And because of this, there needs to be at first the mystery of sowing. From this could be drawn a suckling of the shells. That's the Kabbalistic term for when what should be positive energy turns to negativity. Therefore, there needs to be at first the mystery of the sowing apart, as mentioned above, and afterwards it can be drawn close in the sense of union from below to above. When there needs to be a further joining together, there needs to be another sowing apart and separation. Now, in other words, if the relationship between teacher and student has to go to a deeper level, between Rebbe and Chassid has to go to an even deeper level. The teacher has to rethink his or her own boundaries and proper sense of self, and the student has to go to a deeper level as well. And then both of them have to keep checking up on themselves and relating back to their own most nature at every point. This is very good advice, very important advice. He says the rule of the matter is, just as it is regarding the supernal mysteries, and that's Adam and Chava as understood on the sphera level that he started out with, that there had to be a sawing apart of, you know, of male and female to bring them back together on a higher conscious face-to-face level, so too there has to be a sawing apart of teacher and student so that they become more self-aware in their face-to-face relationship. So it is regarding the connection to the tzaddikim. This is so that by their agency, or the agency of the tzaddik, a person is able to ascend and climb and draw close to God, may he be blessed. So he says, now here he gets a little more specific. There's a bit of a lacuna there. From all that has been mentioned above, the saying of the rabbis, quote, Kol machapa devorim al rabo, whoever invents fictions about his teacher is as if he invents fictions about the Shekhinah, the divine presence. Now, Rashi understands machapa devarim as whoever criticizes his teacher. Okay. Whoever criticizes the teacher, it's as if he's criticizing the divine presence. The Marsha, however, Shlomo Edel's, has a different understanding, and he says it can't be that the Gemara is talking about whoever criticizes his teacher as if he criticizes God. That's not the issue at all. The Marsha says the word, if the Gemara wanted to say criticize, it could have said criticize. It says mechaped devorim, which means to load, to overlay with expectations. To, you know, I used invent fictions, it's the way it's usually translated, but it's to overlay the other person with false and unrealistic expectations. Whoever exaggerates their relationship to their teacher, it's as if they're extending their relationship to God and with unrealistic expectations. Now, we have all kinds of expectations of relationship to God, but what it means is that in our relationship to God, we have to work on ourselves. We're not off the hook. It's not that God does everything and we just sit back. We have to work on ourselves. So too in our relationship in the learning experience, we have to do work on ourselves as well in our relationship, and the teacher does work, and we can't expect the teacher to do all the work for us. Okay, so the says from all that has been, so he's here. The Velednikar is using the Marsha of Shmuel Edel's definition of this and interpretation of this passage. The saying of the rabbis, whoever invents fictions about his teachers as if he invents fictions about the Shekhinah, can be understood. This means that he invents fictions concerning the extension of the teacher. That is called the back, a Kabbalistic term for those unconscious aspects of the teacher, as is known. The person invents fictions about the teacher being able to extend himself to all natures. The Rebbe knows what I'm thinking. He knows what I need. He knows just what I am, you know, I'm about. You know, he's totally intimate with me. You know, there's no difference or no distinction or no distance between us. He does not feel the distance of his own self-worth and imagines in his soul that there's no hindrance from his own side preventing the possibility and ability of the tzaddik to be drawn to him on his own level. He expects that the tzaddik or the teacher will reach him on his own level, that he's, you know, one with the tzaddik, one with the teacher in every way. That's an unrealistic expectation and projection. It is as if he invents fictions about the Shekhinah, for also the Shekhinah, it is said, my glory to another I shall not give, even with God. God sets up a kind of a distance of kavod, you know, a distance that, you know, we are not God. You know, as much as we seek a sense of union and constant relationship with God, we also have to know the difference. For in truth, there's no other aspect or essence besides him. There's nothing but God. God is all being and beyond being. But from the side of the creatures, it's possible, heaven forbid, there be a suckling of the shells according to the mystery of the extension of the Shekhinah to the lower worlds. But we can misunderstand that. We can understand that all of being comes from God, and yet that doesn't mean that I am God. And we have to understand the difference. We are the little beings that we are within everything that God makes possible. So you have to have our own self-awareness, even in our relationship to God, especially. And so too in the relationship to the teacher. So too regarding the extension of the teacher to all natures. It can be, because of the drawing down, a suckling of the shells, that energy of the relationship can become negative, heaven forbid, unless there's a sawing apart and separation beforehand, whether from the side of the one who influences or receives, after which there can be drawing close in union, as mentioned above. All right, so that's his, it goes on even at greater length about this, but I think you get the major message that he's trying to get across here, that separation, self-awareness, and proper boundary is necessary for a higher unification, for a deeper understanding. And when there's no separation and unrealistic expectations, great danger can result from that. Yeah. Well, that is the goal, oneness, or the goal is a deeper conscious awareness. The goal isn't oneness. It's in a crude sense, it's face to face conscious awareness, where a development of our consciousness on a higher level. Right. It's Well, that's a, I mean, this is the question of whether in Torah terms we have a value, whether we value this notion of what's called unio mystica, of mystical union with God, or that we always maintain a sense of difference. Okay. The again, this is why I find this a marvelous postmodern text, is that he's stressing difference and distinction here. You know, again, think in terms of Levinas or Derrida and some of the late phenomenologists, that what's unique about human beings is our ability to respect difference, the other, small o or capital O. And it's the ethical relationship with the other and our difference from the other and therefore our respect for the other that is really the ultimate goal. I mean, in a mature loving relationship, for instance, you know, husband and wife, you know, as a relationship matures, it's not usually that husband and wife feel that they're more and more the same. It's in fact that you come to recognize the difference between yourself and the other person and love the person for their quirkiness, you know, for their idiosyncrasies, for, you know, just how different they are, and that's mature love. You know, in that sense, it's rather than being the same, we can appreciate the difference. What's Jonathan Sachs, Rabbi Sachs's book, the Dignity of Difference, right? This is very important principle, and this is really also at the heart of what the Valendika Rebbe is talking about. This the ability to respect the other as other is at the very heart of real ethics. I mean, this is Levinas's whole oeuvre. It comes from the beginnings of phenomenology. Levinas' teacher was Husserl, Edmund Husserl, whose explorations into the nature of consciousness start with the premise that all consciousness is consciousness of something, okay, which he calls intentionality, which means that consciousness is not a force or a phenomenon. It's an opening to otherness to begin with. So in that sense, consciousness is an ethical relationship to start, says Levinas, meaning it's always a sense of the other. And even when we turn to think about ourselves, we think of ourselves in terms of an other. We look at ourselves in the categories of otherness when we look at ourselves. When we're not looking at ourselves, we're just projected out to others, we're totally open in the field of consciousness. So it's an ethical relation that whose basis is respect for difference and otherness, and that's where it starts. This is the essence of postmodern, you know, continental philosophy today, and it's very much in tune with these Torah principles as well. Alan. Yeah.
So I want to comment. So what you said about Havdalah,
yeah,
it's really interesting. I don't know where to get the information from. What separates
you? Well, you know, the point that he's making is that Havdalah is, we say Havdalah in the bracha of Chonein Hada'at, right?
Yeah.
Chonein Hada'at. So why do we say it there?
It's interesting.
What's that?
It's interesting.
It is interesting, yeah. So think of why does it say Havdalah in the prayer that we thank God for knowledge?
I know.
You know, that's the question that he's raising.
Yeah.
So his knowledge is both a separation and a bringing together.
I get it.
Right, right. Yes. Yeah.
Now, when I hear a story like that, I don't know exactly what the Rebbe is trying to do. I think expectations may be set up in the one who receives this answer that a Rebbe can do this, and
you're
that
absolutely right.
He wants to do this, and therefore have those expectations, number one. And it seems like the Rebbe can do it, or maybe not in all situations. And I always wonder, like, even if the Rebbe could do it, like, why is the Rebbe demonstrating that? What is the agenda? Was it a positive?
I mean,
what is it? I don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, some real Hasidic Rebbeim, and I've met them, and I've been with them, and I've seen them do it, have real, you know, telepathic ability, and they're getting across to the Hasid or the student that this is possible, that that our normal ways of thinking about the limits of consciousness should be expanded. And if he's getting that across, that's an important lesson to get across. It helps the student also, or the Hasid, think about the possibilities. You know, if the Rebbe knows what I'm thinking, God knows what I'm thinking, so let's kind of shape up in that area in terms of how we use our minds. And so there are lessons, positive lessons to get across, no question about it. But there are also times when the Rebbe should not be too quick to answer the question of the student before the student has even asked them, because there's a lot that the student can reveal when the Rebbe really listens deeply to the student. So I mean, the question. The cases that you mentioned where people tell you about these stories are remarkable because people are always amazed by telepathic ability. It shows us that there's deeper things going on in the world, and that's great. But in true yichidus, a real intimate, you know, diagnostic relationship with the Rebbe listens very carefully to the Hasid and doesn't just answer his questions right away, because it's a deep soul-to-soul communication. You know, they say in Oriental religions you have this kind of a slogan. You know, when the student is ready, the teacher appears, right? That kind of thing. But the Jewish approach is different. I mean, think of the example of Eliyahu HaNavi and Elisha. We're talking about this. When Eliyahu HaNavi is about to leave the world, he goes up in a chariot of fire. His student, Elisha, knows that he's about to leave the world, and he follows him everywhere, and won't let him go. And finally, Eliyahu HaNavi says to him, you know that I'm about to leave the world, so ask of me something and I'll give it to you. And what Elisha asks is, Tainli pishnayim meruchacha asher alecha. Give me a double portion of the spirit that is upon you. And Eliyahu HaNavi says, hikshish lisho, you've asked a difficult thing. I mean, I can give you one portion of spirit that I can give you, but how can I give you two portions of spirit? But Eliyahu says to him, and brilliant, he says, if you see me being taken from you, in other words, taken from this world, and you see it happen, you will get what you ask. And in fact, and then Eliyahu HaNavi is taken up in a whirlwind on a fiery chariot into Shemayim. And Elisha does receive the pishnayim, the double portion of spirit. So what is that double portion of spirit? It's Eliyahu's portion that he learned from his teacher, and his own, exactly, and his own portion. Because what Eliyahu has done, Eliyahu has been the ultimate teacher, teaching his student, training Elisha to be one of the great, great all-time Nevi'im, but also, at the right time, leaving his student. And giving Elisha back to himself, right? Breaking the charismatic relationship, resetting, the boundary and giving the student back to himself. So we say the Jewish slogan would be, when the student is ready, the teacher disappears, right? And that's the way it should be, right? And it, a sense of restraint and humility on the part of the teacher to withdraw when necessary. So that the student can really come into their own and to be themselves in the fullest sense. And I guess I wanted to share with you this text, which I hold very dearly, and I'd like to, I feel kind of a mission to get this across, and particularly to teachers, to use the power of the teaching relationship, but not to abuse it, to recognize the precious beauty of it, and to also, in that process, to respect the student, to set proper boundaries, and to allow the student to really develop themselves in the deepest way, with a sense of self-reliance, self-worth, self-awareness. Oh, thanks.